Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Okay, here's how Miro works. See, it's amazing.
What's everyone doing at David's desk?
Ever since marketing started using Miro's collaborative online whiteboard, he thinks all our other teams should sign up.
Why?
He says Miro's making his meetings disappear. And if every team gets on it, that means even less meetings. They're using Miro for brainstorms, mind maps, customer research.
So could we use Miro instead of having another 100 meetings for every round of feedback?
Yep. You can comment, react to ideas, even leave a recording on the board.
And what about presentations?
There are Miro templates for that.
How do you know so much about Miro?
I've actually been using it all along. I just used a Miro board to plan the best vacation.
Okay, I'm on board.
See how Miro users save up to 80 hours every year by meeting less and doing more. Get on board at Miro.com with 3 boards free forever. That's Miro.com.
This is John Rocha, one third of the Geek Buddies, with this awesome ad for you. If you like this show and you want to make your own, and some of you have reached out and asked us about making your own podcast, well, let me tell you about Anchor. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And now you can even add any song from Spotify directly to your episodes. The possibilities are endless for what you can create, whether it's music analysis, your own radio show, or something the world's never heard before. Go ahead and let your freak flag fly. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and so many more places. And you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Take it from us here at the Geek Buddies. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Now, on with the Geek Buddies show. Everyone, and welcome to another brand new episode of the
Geek Buddies.
Hey! We're back again for another week of geeky goodness here. We're talking about so many subjects, talking about some Loki, WandaVision sync ups, talking about some first reactions to old, talking about some new trailers that have dropped, and getting into one massive trailer, The Last Duel. That's our main topic because there is so much involved in that trailer. We felt it deserved a really deep dive from the three of us into that. So stay tuned for all of that coming up after we introduce ourselves. I am the Outlaw John Rocha, writer, producer, and host here on the Outlaw Nation and the Geek Buddies.
I am Michael Vogel. I'm a writer and producer of animated TV shows and movies.
And this is Shannon McClung. I'm an animation writer and a television actor where you may have seen me on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Silicon Valley, and Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I love it when you drop your credits. I don't care what anybody says. We're getting into some things here. And the way the show works is each one of us presents a geek news item. We talk about it amongst ourselves for your enjoyment. And then we take a bit of a break and jump into our main topic. Big shout out to everyone who's joining us again this week. And if you're new to the show, thank you very much for taking a chance on the Geek Buddies. Or if you're listening to us on the podcast feed, thank you very much for subscribing to the podcast feed. Don't forget to do that. The Geek Buddies, separate podcast feed. Type it in wherever you download podcasts. Subscribe to it and then take us anywhere you want to go. The gym, boating, getting shot out of a cannon, whatever it is, you can take us with you. All right, where are we starting first?
What is your week like? What is a normal week in your life?
It's been crazy. It's been crazy.
When was the last time you were on a boat?
With Andy Samberg and the Lonely Planet guys. In Tupac. That's right. I got my flippin' floppies. All right, let's do this. Mikey's in executive mode. You can tell. He's like, please, can we just get to the points? What's going on, my man?
I'm just trying. No, I was actually just having like flashbacks to that time we all went out on that boat for Shannon's birthday and everybody got sick.
Not everybody.
I mean, like half the people.
Folks got sick.
Half the people on the boat got sick.
And we were also drinking champagne and parasailing.
Yeah, well, sure. That'll do it.
As George might say, the water was choppy that day, my friends. The water was choppy.
John drew blood on one of our friends.
I did. You're right. Poor Mike Fox. Don't put your head there. Anyway, all right, let's move on. Mikey, what do you got for us?
Here's what I got. So really cool thing that kind of came out in the past few days on the internet. Obviously, last week was the big season finale of Loki. We had a lot of thoughts on it. Definitely check out our Loki season finale spoiler review that we did with the always awesome Emma Fyfe. Something that came along this week is that as Loki kicked us off into the multiverse, WandaVision may have gotten there a little bit earlier in a really cool way. Jacob Siegel at BGR.com kind of posted this thing, but there's a video posted of the WandaVision finale put up against the Loki finale, and at the exact same moment, about 27 minutes and 55 seconds into both episodes, it is the moment where Wanda finally fully becomes the Scarlet Witch in her battle with Agatha, and it is the exact same moment that He Who Remains reaches the threshold, the moment where he no longer knows what is going to happen. And this is one of those things that when you say, oh, hey, look, some guy on YouTube synced these things up and they match, you kind of go, okay, yeah, sure. And if you play Dark Side of the Moon along with Wizard of Oz, it all matches up, like, whatever. Like, you kind of like roll your eyes. But then you watch this thing, and literally, at the exact moment that He Who Remains kind of looks up and says, whoa, we've reached the threshold in Loki, it is the exact same moment in WandaVision that Wanda becomes the Scarlet Witch. And then literally, when you sync them up next to each other, He Who Remains says, we've just crossed the threshold. And as if they were in the same scene, Agatha says, oh God, you have no idea what you've done. And then when Wanda waves her hand in WandaVision, there is thunder in the background of Loki. And then the part that just literally kills me is seconds later, when Wanda and Agatha kind of come back down to Earth in Westview, they land, Agatha collapses, and He Who Remains picks up something on his desk and drops it so that it lands at the exact same moment that Agatha does. So it's pretty wild. First of all, I will tell you, like, as much as I just pitched this as it is perfectly in sync, as someone who works in the industry, I was talking to some other friends, and everyone is like, this has to be a coincidence. Like, the sheer organization that it would take to coordinate this is insane for some random thing that, why would you do this? But then when you watch it, you're like, dude, that is really in sync.
Yeah.
So I have some thoughts on it, but first of all, what do you guys watch the video? Like, what do you guys think? Did I do it justice? Did I do it right?
Oh, yeah.
And what do you guys think about this moment? Because I'm clearly super jazzed about it.
Take it away, Johnny.
To me, this is exactly what we wanted to see from Marvel going into the next phase, right? Something completely insane out there, and the level of brilliance. You know, how do you top yourself when you have done such incredible work Kevin Feige has over the first three phases? How do you top yourself? You know, just like the films kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger with more and more superheroes and villains involved in it, you've got to top yourself as a creator as well. So Kevin Feige's like, ooh, you know what? Since I'm in control of these television shows, and screw that Marvel stuff, screw that ABC stuff, these are my shows. These are syncing up to the movies. Then I'm going to be in control of how this all looks. So to me, this feels purposeful, and this is genius. And this is like one of those things where, like, they did it, and probably like, if the person who finds out about this, the person who figures this out, is going to get so much love for this. We're not going to say anything about it. Let's see if anybody figures it out. And I know brilliant minds work like that. And Kevin Feige is a brilliant mind. The people below him, brilliant minds. And I believe this was done on purpose, and it makes so much sense. Because remember, this is a multiverse. So numerous things can happen. And this dude is in charge of a bunch of variants, has dealt with a bunch of variants in multiple universes. So for him to sense Wanda becoming Wanda, that is not out of the realm of possibility in terms of syncing things up. So to me, this makes all kinds of sense, and I love it. I think it's brilliant. And shout out to that YouTuber who figured it out. Because who would ever think to put the finale up to the finale and then watch them at the same time to sync it up? It's genius.
Yeah, I fully agree, Johnny. I mean, I feel like something like this, it has to have been intentional.
Right.
We talked about the level of organization and coordination and synchronization and execution. Like, they did 23 movies, and it wasn't perfect. Like, there were things that they kind of had to retcon later, and I think that's why this was deliberate, is that they have learned from their mistakes. I mean, you look at Spider-Man Homecoming, the timing doesn't quite work out. Like, whatever the time jump is between the Battle of New York and Peter and the start of our story, the time jump is weird. Like, whatever the Chiron was, however many years later, it doesn't match up.
Right.
You look at sort of like the continuity wonkiness at the beginning of Black Panther, how Chadwick Boseman's hair is completely different, but this is supposed to have started right after Civil War. So these are little mistakes that happen. Mm-hmm. Going in, being able to learn from those mistakes and being able to kind of up their game in the way that it certainly seems like they're doing. I know there was a lot of not hesitation, but I guess a lot of curiosity about how can you top these first three phases. Like, it's impossible. Like, Thanos, you built to one big event, and out the gate, it certainly seems like not only do they have a plan, but they're already executing it very well. And despite what you think of the shows, I mean, I know some people were not as into Loki. Some people weren't as into WandaVision. You can't argue the care that is being put into this, the synchronization that it took to create this, and where it more than likely is going to be leading in our next few movies.
So Mike? I'm like sort of still of two minds about it. I'll give you executive me brain, and then I'll give you like nerd me brain. Executive me brain is still like, as much as they are in control and everything you guys said is 100% right, basically telling Kate Herron and the Loki team, hey, want you to do what you do with your finale. It's really important that you stick the landing. But also at exactly 27 minutes and 55 seconds, this is exactly what needs to happen. Is like, that's a tall order. Like, even if you're, because like they had to fill up the.
What's wrong?
Shannon? Did I froze? You guys both froze, so I thought it might have been me.
Shannon. Why are you throwing me off my game here?
Sorry.
Yeah. Let him speak his piece, Shannon. What's going on?
So to tell Kate Herron exactly at 27:55, here's where you have to have this moment. Like, for any writer, like, that's a tough thing to do. So it's still, there's a part of me that's like, come on, this can't. They didn't. But then you look at it and the evidence is there. And so nerd me is like, well, first of all, remember the fact that WandaVision wasn't supposed to be the first one. It was supposed to go Falcon, Winter Soldier, WandaVision, Loki. So WandaVision and Loki were going to be much closer. And then when you line that up for the fact that Loki is all about order versus chaos, they say it over and over and over again, and the Scarlet Witch is chaos magic. And in episode 7 in the commercial, she did take those pills for Nexus antidepressants, which means that like she is a Nexus being, Nexus event. I don't think here's where the rubber's gonna meet the road for me. Okay. I don't think they did it just to do it. Like, I don't think they did it to be like, well, let's see if somebody figures this out. Okay. I think when we get to Doctor Strange 2 is when I will decide if it was for real or not. Like, if they talk about the threshold, if they talk about her being a Nexus being, if her the multiverse opening up and what is happening with her are intrinsically linked, which I actually assume they will be, then I'll believe it was all, I want it to be. Like, it's so cool. I want it to be real. There's still a part of my brain that's like, come on. What? Come on. But, I mean, the evidence speaks for itself. Whether it's an amazing cosmic coincidence or the work of Kevin Feige, probably the work of Kevin Feige, go watch the video. It is wild. It is a trip. I love it.
I think it's genius. I mean, why would you doubt them being able to do this? And I hear what you're saying. Obviously, Mike, you don't want to step on a creator's thing, but as a creator, when you're walking into this universe, you understand, like, you know, you're in service to the overall piece. So it wouldn't necessarily be out of the realm possibility that, you know, Feige negotiated this from the beginning, and this is what I want to do. So maybe that kind of, you know, angles or influences how Herron directs the film, or the show rather. But, you know, the editors are the ones who really kind of line everything right up. So that's where the thing at the end of the day, if they were to talk about
it. You're right. That's a good point. Let me put it a different way. I completely believe that Marvel and Kevin Feige and the Marvel creative team have the wherewithal and ability to do this. Like, I don't think that it's so outside of the realm of, like, they absolutely can pull this off. I don't believe they would pull this off just to throw it out. If you're going to go to the work of doing this, I don't think you leave it for some random dude to find out. Like, I think there's a rhyme and reason. And so I like, that's kind of what I mean by the Doctor Strange of it all. It's like, this is a huge, super cool thing. Right. If you went and did it, like, there should be a payoff. And so I'm waiting to see, like, what happens in Doctor Strange 2. But I do agree with both of you guys. I mostly think they clearly had to have done this on purpose because they're so perfect.
They're just too smart not to, right? And it also because this is astronomically, I mean, the odds of someone call DeGrasse Tyson and ask him what the odds are that this could actually line up in this way. Like, we need a statistician somewhere who can figure out what the odds of this possibility happening without it being intentional. It's probably off the charts. You know, it's as complex as the multiverse, in my opinion.
Well, and I mean, in editors, that's something that a really good editor can do is you can work things down to the second. I mean, all the time you hear about SNL at the 11th hour, like, you need to lose 15 seconds out of this sketch. Yeah. And I mean, and they consistently do it. So the idea that you're basing this, especially the WandaVision clip, off of a big effect shot. Like, do we need to take 1 second away from this? Do we need to add 3 seconds here? They can do it.
Right. You know what it is? You know what I think it is? I think that I think Marvel makes me feel like I'm in a cult and I'm a crazy person. Like, I think that, like, after, like, all the Mephistos, like we're at the point now where somebody's like, if you put these two episodes up next to each other, they totally sync up. And everyone's like, yeah, man. And I'm like, are we all crazy? Like, did this, like, did we all drink the Kool-Aid together? Like, what's going on? It's so, like, I want to believe, but there's a part of me that's like, nah, man, come on.
Look, in that WandaVision one sheet, that is a devil face. That is 100% a devil face. I mean, you can't tell me it's not. That
not
was
wrong.
Deliberate. And for Jack Schaefer to say that I didn't even hear the name of Fisk, I'm like, that is BS. You don't throw things out. Like, the devil isn't the devil's in the details. That's not the only place he is. Go, demon spot. Come on.
Still fighting for that Mephisto.
Shannon's deep-rooted anger at Jack Schaefer comes out.
Finally, we can address it on the show.
It's not anger. Just don't tell me I'm crazy for thinking it.
Let's talk about the elephant in the room here, guys.
Oh, man. All right. All right. Where are we off to next? What are we getting into next, my man? Oh, yeah. Is it me? Is it my turn?
I think you're taking us to the beach.
Yeah. Let's go into this thing. There are a lot of first reactions for old. I want to kind of bring up the article. Sorry, I didn't have it already queued up here. I was too involved in this discussion with Mike and Shannon about this thing that's going on. But the first reactions have come in for old. And it's really interesting what we're hearing from some of the reviewers. Sean O'Connell is my brother over there at Cinema Blend. He said, M. Night Shyamalan gets so creative with old, his camera work is exhilarating with some of the most bold and aggressive filmmaking techniques I've seen from him. The visuals are a little stronger than the story, but damn, Thomasin McKenzie continues to amaze. Absolutely, Thomasin McKenzie is one of the best. My brother Fico from the Hollywood Critics Association, he said, thank you to M. Night Shyamalan. I had not been scared of the beach since Jaws, and now old, the movie has me in full suspense and stress mode the whole time. Really enjoyed its premise and themes. Be ready to spend an unsettling bonkers vacation in paradise. Check it out. Jermaine Lussier says, time to tell you about M. Night Shyamalan's Old. Old is the best movie Night has made since Unbreakable. Damn. It's an intense, unrelenting thriller made with sadistically and surprising emotion. It's hard to watch, and I loved every second of it. Full review and interview later on this week for sure. Katie's Movies said, So old movie is certainly a movie that exists. I saw it quite a while ago, and I'm still unsure how I feel about it. M. Night usually swings for the fences, and usually either nails it or whiffs so hard he breaks his own nose. Old is neither. It's just fine, which is a shame. And then Chris Evangelista, he said, oh, we can talk about old? Okay. It's M. Night back in full-blown The Happening mode, which a lot of people have been kind of afraid that this movie would be. Whether or not that's a good thing will be up to you. Guess I need to include the addendum that I like The Happening. So, and he's a senior.
So they're the one.
Yes,
they're the one.
And he's the senior writer and chief film critic for Slash Film. So, and I like, respect the my brothers and sisters over there at Slash Film. Let's see if I've got any more. My brother JTE over here. He said, old the movie showcases some of the best and worst of Enmite's tendencies. There are some great ideas, and the tension throughout the film is relentless. Put it this way, it might not all work, but you'll never be bored. One of M. Night's biggest issues is still dialogue. These are pretty much the reactions. Some people, I even saw the word masterpiece thrown out there by a couple of people who saw the film. Not critics, but a couple of people who saw the film. And, you know, M. Night Shyamalan has been hit or miss now at least he's somewhat getting hits over the last few years when he went on a little bit of a run where people stopped believing that he was any good as a filmmaker. So this one feels like a majority of people seem to like it, but there are some people who don't like it and are dinging him for some of the things that people have always dinged him for, the dialogue in his movies. And I'm sure he appears in some way in the movie. So what do you guys think when you hear these kind of overall general reviews of Old, which is coming out this weekend?
I would think pre-Split, yeah, I would have written this off right off the bat. But watching Split, even though it led to Glass, which I didn't like, Split was just such a well-crafted story. It was just so edge of your seat. You know, M. Night Shyamalan can tell a really good story. I mean, The Sixth Sense, still one of the best twists in the history of Hollywood, I would think. Unbreakable. I mean, I like Signs. I know a lot of people are like, on Signs.
Right.
He can tell a really good story. I mean, and it seems like a lot of these reactions, they seem to kind of run the gamut little bit. I read one that it said it starts off slow, which for an M. Night Shyamalan movie is not shocking. They typically proceed at a pretty somewhat languid pace, but then it really gets going. I don't know. I mean, it's definitely a movie that I'll see, and it's a movie that I'm crossing my fingers there will be a crowd with. Because his movies, because they are such a sort of a communal experience, like you can hear, you can figure out who in the audience is getting things quicker than, like, you can hear it. It's sort of like a rolling wave of when people get stuff. I mean, I was one of the last ones to understand what had happened in The Sixth Sense, and a friend of mine who I saw it with was completely wrong, and he tried to explain it to me, and I was like, not only am I not understanding this, your theory is ridiculous.
What was his theory?
What was his theory? Or her theory?
That he had figured out that it's like, oh, he's a ghost. He just died. And I'm like, wait, what? Oh. And he's like, you know, when you become a ghost, you lose all sort of like physical being. And that's why the ring fell off. Like, he didn't get that the wife had dropped the ring. Like, it wasn't him. So I was just like, no. I don't think that's correct. I mean, I was smart enough to know that I didn't know what was going on.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, Thomasin McKenzie, as many of the reviewers said, I mean, she's an electric performer. I mean, love watching her act. You know, Ken Leung, Alex Wolff. I mean, this is a good cast. So fingers crossed, I'm going to be on the positive side after I watch this one.
Don't leave out Vicky Krieps. Anyway, yeah, I loved her in Phantom Threat. Michael, what are your thoughts on these?
Well, I will say, like, as far, I don't think that, at least in the reviews that I saw, that a lot of the ones that you just read, they're not quite running the gamut. Like, nobody is saying this movie is garbage. I mean, the closest one is the person that says it's like The Happening, but that person likes The Happening. So,
they kind of buried the lead on that, by the way.
They buried the lead on it. Like, don't. It's like, that's like, yeah, I can't. But.
And that was so funny, right? Because Evangelista put it as his second second tweet right below the main tweet. And there was room for him to put that in the main tweet. So he's clearly trolling or messing around with the fans.
Yeah. But, like, so, you know, I kind of agree with Shannon. Like, I will say this for M. Night Shyamalan. Like, love him or hate him, and half the – not half – there's a good chunk of the time where I hate him. With the exception of the live-action Avatar movie, which I refuse to watch and will never, ever watch because I don't want my love for Avatar The Last Airbender to be sullied by having that in my eyeballs.
Right.
I love him or hate him, like, you want to see what he's going to do. Mm-hmm. And I actually think the one review that you... the one that you mentioned where he either hits a home run or he like falls on his face hard is kind of accurate. Mm-hmm. I find this movie intriguing. I don't really know where it's going to go. I had read that he didn't know where it was going to go until the very end. Like, he had a couple endings in mind, and he, even as he was in the editing booth, wasn't quite sure, which makes me a little nervous. But I'm intrigued, and my takeaway from all of this is nobody hates it.
People
are coming out and saying, look, he doesn't have great dialogue. This one kind of suffers from that. It's a little bit slow at the beginning. It's a little bit this, which are all the things you expect. But the worst thing that I heard is that it's just fine. As far as for an M. Night Shyamalan movie, compared to some of the things that he's done, just fine is actually a solid place. I do not think Glass is just fine. I don't think The Happening is just fine. I will say, I can't ding anybody who... loves any part of M. Night Shyamalan movie, because I'm one of the three people in the world that actually didn't hate Lady in the Water. So that's my cross to bear. But so I'm intrigued, and I kind of can't wait to see it so that we can actually talk about it and see what where we fall on the Shyamalan-o-meter.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm seeing Snake Eyes tonight, but I'm getting a link to Old, so I'll be watching it tomorrow at some point. And I'm hoping I love it. And I think it's actually, it probably would be a good, like, early afternoon watch. Do you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I don't think I'll remove the horror, because it seems like most of it occurs in the daytime from the trailer. So just a quick breakdown of the synopsis before we move on. It is coming out this weekend. And so this one, as Shannon said, are all the stars here. But let me tell you the real quick synopsis. It follows a family that goes to a mysterious beach during their vacation. Eventually, they discover that along with several other tourists, they are trapped in paradise and aging rapidly. As I said, it is every actor's worst nightmare. So, all right. So where are we off to next, my gentleman?
To trailers, trailers.
Hello.
So we're going to cover two here before we get into that last trailer that's our main topic. But the first two we're going to chat about, very different, but both are in their intention is to make you laugh. So the first one that I watched today, because John pointed me in its direction, is Jackass Forever.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
If you ever watched the show on MTV, the stunt prank show, which debuted over 20 years ago, can you believe that? I think it was in 2000.
I can't believe Johnny Knoxville's gray hair in this trailer, yes, but go ahead. Yes,
basically, if this is the thing that makes you laugh, it's just more of the same. I mean, they have some guest people come in, like Eric Andre is in, Machine Gun Kelly, Post Malone shows up. The thing with Jackass, especially, and it was more with the television show than the film. This is actually the fourth feature.
Fifth, I think,
if you count Bad Grandpa. But the fourth of just like, it's pretty much just here are some stunts, here are some pranks. The thing that always kind of rubbed me the wrong way about the TV show was the pranks that would take advantage of people's goodwill. That was one that never really sat well with me. I remember they did a prank where they put an empty baby carrier on top of a car in a parking lot and drove. And you see all these people thinking that there is an infant and they're running after them, trying to fly. No, no, stop, stop, stop. It's things like that I have a real problem. I'm like, already people are so shitty to each other. Don't give them more reason. Well,
but people sign releases to be in the film from that. Fair, so, I mean,
fair
you know,
enough.
They allowed
fair
it to be shown.
Yeah, yeah. This is just personal taste. Some of the stunts that they show in this, really, really made me laugh. I mean, they talk about how Johnny Knoxville is 49 and you shouldn't get a concussion. Concussions are bad. They're really bad starting at 50. It's like, well, he's 49. He should be great. There are some very, very funny stunts. But gentlemen, what did you think of our first look at Jackass Forever?
I don't know that it's a movie that I need to go out and see, but I certainly will watch at some point and enjoy. I mean, like, Like, I'm kind of with you that I think, like, about 50% of it is really stupid, and 50% of it just hits me in the exact right spot, and it just kills me and makes me laugh. I think my overall takeaway from this trailer, oddly enough, is that I kind of love that they're doing this as they get older. It makes me feel like there's definitely a, as you start to get older, and you're like, do I have to leave all the stupid shit that I did as a kid behind? And you're like, no, you don't. Look at these assholes. Like, cool.
Yeah.
Like, let's all go out and do stupid shit. I think doing stupid shit keeps us young. And these guys look like they're all still having a blast, and God love them for it. Like, I'm like, I'm that, that more so than like watching a bunch. There's something that strikes me almost like it's either sad or endearing. I can't remember. I don't know which one it is. But like watching a bunch of 29-year-olds do the world's stupidest shit, you're like, yeah, you're 29. That's a given. Watching a bunch of 49-year-olds do it, you're like, well, you're still going.
Yeah. More and, it, you know, and the thing, that's what I think came through with the trailer as well. I did a trailer reaction. It should be up on the channel now, but I did a trailer reaction for this because I wanted to watch it and have a genuine reaction and see how I thought. And it was great. The thing that I enjoyed about the trailer is it is just a happy trailer. Like, it is these guys getting together. You know, we're dealing with COVID, and the whole trailer starts off with saying, like, you know, like, when's the last time you got together with all your friends and laughed? And so many people, you know, were so desperate to see friends again after things started to loosen up a little bit with COVID. It kind of hit that nerve. So it was a great way to start. And then seeing the next shot is them all way older and stuff. You're just like, oh, shit. So then they get into all the things that they do. And the Eric Andre thing at the food truck. Oh, my God. I lost it. The hand with the peddling. I think that's Machine Gun Kelly, who's peddling there, and they gets hit with the hand. It's genius. The marching band on the treadmill stuff, that is brilliant. And the girl winging the softball and the dude's nuts, and then she goes, yeah, nailed it. I mean, it just feels like a fun time overall, and I think we're going to have a great time watching it. And it doesn't feel like, Shannon was alluding to, like they're doing pranks at people's expenses, at least from this trailer. So, from the trailer. And I'm curious where you fall on this, Shannon, because Borat literally had two movies doing that. You know, he came out with a bag of poop at these people while they're having dinner, claiming he didn't know what to do with it, right? So, like, it's those kinds of things. So there's a whole cottage industry for people who know how to take advantage of people's good natures in situations like that. And people seem to love Borat, but they bash Jackass Forever.
I think I probably had more issues with the first Borat than the second one. Because I do feel like a couple of times in the first Borat, I'm like, eh, you're really crossing over the line with taking advantage of people's goodwill. I'm like, that's like most of the people he encountered in the second one seem to be kind of shitty people. So it's like, if you're doing it to assholes, I have no issue with.
Yeah, like Bruno. Yeah, no problem with Bruno. Yeah, that makes sense. Yep.
And I will say, this comes out October 22nd. I'm really keeping my fingers crossed that I will be able to watch this with my friend John Rocha, because we talked about before. He's a very vocal audience member, and watching Jackass with John, I imagine he will exit the theater and immediately come back in at least three times. That's my guess right now.
I do remember. I don't remember the joke, but I do remember when me and John and our friend Sarah went to go see The Heat.
Yeah.
Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy. And at one point, it was just the three of us in the middle. We were sitting in the middle of the row, and there was no one else in the row. And something happened that was so funny that John stood up, screamed, walked all the way to the end of the aisle, and came all the way back, like twice, and then sat down and said, that was funny. And I was like, that is the way that anybody would like someone to respond to their joke. You had to take a walk.
I'm not trying to offend anybody. It was a very well done albino joke. It was very well done. Melissa McCarthy. Oh my God. She said, you're right. You look a little pale. I still lose it every time. Anyway, sorry.
So Jackass Forever comes out October of this year.
Well, if we can't have a Gerard Butler film, Shannon, we'll go see that for my birthday.
Yeah, around the Outlaws' 25th birthday,
yes. You're
finally going to be able to rent a car. Our second trailer that we're talking today is it's called Vacation Friends, and it stars John Cena, Lil Will Howery, and I think her name is Meredith Hagner from Search Party, which if you haven't seen Search Party, all four seasons are on HBO Max. It is a delightful hipster mystery romp. But this is from director Clay Tarver, who was a writer and a producer on Silicon Valley. And this movie comes out in late August. This seems like a perfect August summer movie. Like you have just sort of a big kind of balls to the wall, kind of a dirty comedy. It's about a couple meets up with another couple while on vacation in Mexico, but their friendship takes an awkward turn when they get back home. So again, Mr. Rocha was the one who found this trailer and pointed it in mine and Mr. Vogel's directions. So let's start with that. Let's start with Johnny. What did you think of Vacation Friends?
At some point, I'm going to have to get over my aversion to John Cena movies. And by that, I mean, not that I don't go see them, but that I go, is he going to be good? At some point, I've got to accept he is good in these movies and he kills it in these movies. And he is a burgeoning star. I never thought Cena would make the jump. It is such a shock to me. Batista, I had suspicions he could. Rock, I knew could. But Cena, I didn't think. But he's been incredible. From Blockers to what was a train wreck to even voicing Ferdinand in the Bull movie, it was great. So watching him in this is great Cena. This is DGAF Cena, and it is so well done, very funny. The blonde, I don't know who the blonde actress is with him. She is stellar. Little Al Howery is just so good. He even made his scenes in Space Jam 2 work, and they shouldn't have worked. He's just a very, very funny guy. So you got Bunny from The Wire. So, I mean, him in there as What's-His-Face's dad, as Little Howdy's dad, is perfect. I mean, and there's great funny lines because you're like, how do you be able to foursome as long as a woman's involved? So we know we're jumping into some really raunchy stuff here, but Cena plays it so well, like he did in Blockers, like he did in Sisters, the one with Poehler and Tina Fey. So this is his wheelhouse, and it looks like this is going to be a lot of fun. And it's very reminiscent of, like, what was it, Girls Trip? What was it, Girls? The one with Tiffany Haddish, Girls Trip? Is that what it's called?
Girls Trip.
Yeah, it's got that kind of vibe to it. Blockers, all those kind of, like, raunchy, funny films that, you know, we can enjoy even amidst the PC culture, the woke culture, as people like to say. We can still enjoy these when they're done well. And this looks like it's going to be a fun one. So that's my two cents.
Mikey?
I mean... I actually do think – you brought up Blockers, you brought up Girls Trip, and I did kind of realize, like, as I watched this trailer that it's been a minute since – like, there was that era, like, especially in the 2000s with American Pie, and, like, every movie that came out, like, Road Trip, everything, like, every movie that came out was, like, that raunchy, inappropriate comedy. And whether it's because of PC culture, whatever, like, we haven't had as many of those. And so seeing a movie that was just balls to the wall, just inappropriate, out of control, ridiculous. I mean, at the end of this trailer, when they eat those mushrooms and they start running around and like rolling around in the grass, I was like, first of all, accurate, been there. Second of all, was like, that's hilarious. So I agree with you about Cena. Like, I don't know that Cena has like some huge dramatic chops in him. I don't know that he's going to move on to be an Oscar contender. But he's fucking funny. Yeah. I mean, he's a funny guy. And, you know, the whole concept of, I think, like, your guard is down. Like, it's a great idea for a movie. Like, your guard is down on vacation. Like, you go on vacation and you know that you're in another country or another place for a limited number of days. And maybe sometimes you meet people that you wouldn't want to commit to long term for a friendship, but for the 4 days that you're on vacation, like, it's cool. And then those people just don't go away out of your life. Like, it's like, it was like when those people showed up at the wedding, it was equal parts hilarious and horrifying to me because as someone, and John has dinged me more than once in our lives, as someone who is kind of an outgoing, friendly person, but also will quickly move on when bored, I have definitely been on vacation or at Comic-Con or other places with John where I will be super nice to some crazy person and they'll be like, yeah, we should do this. And like, we should. And like, introduce them to John and then just disappear in a puff of smoke.
Yeah. Next thing you know, we've got a barnacle on our boat and the captain's left the ship. Yeah, it's really great.
So watching this trailer, like, I was like, oh, this would be like me introducing someone to John, disappearing, and they show up at his wedding. I'm like, cool, yeah, I want to go see this. This looks good to me.
Look, the cocaine joke on the rim of the glass, that's great. God. And then when you don't do drugs, even on vacation? it's the one place you can. Oh, sorry, Shannon.
Really quickly, it did also remind me of, this is like what Burning Man is like every day. Like, when you go to Burning Man and you don't have your phone and there's no real way to, like, follow up with people, like, you'll find yourself, like, hanging out with someone that you would never hang out with. Like, you'll just be like, yeah, like, what's your name? Like, oh, my name is, like, Dove Blossom. Like, yeah, like, I'm really into energy and, like, I believe that I'm a dragon. And you're like, cool, I'll hang out with you for 2 hours. And then you're like, gotta go. Yeah. And I'm just picturing, like, those people showing up at, like, my job.
I hope that dragon doesn't have wings. yeah, I mean, I thought it was super funny. I mean, again, this is a comedy, the type of comedy I feel like we haven't gotten a ton of in the last few years. Right. And I think the hit to miss ratio with this type of comedy, it's about 50-50. I mean,
yeah, sure.
And I think that's being generous. And I think what gives me hope with this is one, Clay Tarver, the fact that this guy was a writer and a producer on Silicon Valley, and that's not because I was on Silicon Valley. It was because the first three seasons of that show are fantastic. I mean, really, really, really well written, really well directed. But also Meredith Hagner, who plays John Cena's girlfriend slash wife.
Okay.
That's her name.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's the actress in Search Party, and she is hilarious. So to the John Cena, he's one of those guys. He was Bumblebee that he was in that I was like, God, his performance is again kind of hit and miss here. Like, there when he's being funny, I really like him. When he gets serious, it's like, I feel like you're in the wrestling ring right now. Like, I don't really believe you. So but when he's doing just that straight comedy, thus far he's pretty funny. Like, he's pretty good. Like, he plays such a great bro. And also the fact that it's coming out in August. Granted, it's the last weekend in August, but it's coming out in August. I mean, this is typically the type of month where these comedies come out, and hopefully it'll be funny.
I want to make sure I say this the right way, but I think that traditionally the raunchy comedy has been the purview of a bunch of white people. You know, whether it be American Pie or Road Trip or whatever, like, it is just traditionally, like, that's like white frat boy kind of comedy. And I think the two movies that you guys brought up, Blockers was really great because it was the whole, we're going to lose our virginity on prom night, but flipped to be girls and was a little bit smarter because of it. Like, I told Kay Cannon, who directed it, we were talking about it, and I was like, they managed to tell, like, the funniest appropriate gay joke. It's when Cena and the other guy, when they're in the house with the family and the guy's naked and they're trying to figure the thing out, and they're like, I'm not gay, but it's okay, my cousin's gay, but I don't want to touch this guy's balls. Like, it's really funny. And I think that, like, it sort of elevated the raunchy comedy game. And I think Girls Trip similarly took the kind of idea that is typically a white male thing, but gave it to a bunch of black women. And I do think there is something about this trailer. As you're watching it, you're like, well, here is this perfectly lovely black couple having an amazing wedding with, like, majority black people at the wedding. And then these crazy white people show up. And I think that there's probably something about that, like, if they play it smart, like, that allows you, just like with Blockers, just like with Girls Trip, it allows you to do a lot of the types of jokes that were in other raunchy comedies but maybe wouldn't land right today, and allows you to do them because it recontextualizes them. And I think that that's one of the other things that I thought when I watched this trailer. I'm like, oh, this could work because, like, because watching two crazy white people show up, you're like, yeah, y'all crazy. Like, it could work.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, that is August 27th, so just a few weeks from now.
On who? It said Hulu at the end of the trailer. So was it going to be on Hulu, or is it going to be released from a studio?
I believe
when it says Hulu at the end of the trailer,
yeah,
it probably means that we could find it on Hulu.
Okay. All right. I'm looking. Yeah, it's 20th Century Studios and Hulu together. I'm looking at the press release here. It will be available Latin America on Star plus August 31st. So I feel like it's going to be on Hulu then. Stream exclusively on Disney's direct consumer platforms as a Hulu original. All right. There you go.
Well, there you go.
All right. August 22nd. Good stuff. All right. There you go. That's our first section of the show here, where we talk about our geek news items. We're going to take a quick break and get into the lab, put on our Middle Ages armor and our weird blonde goatees, and get into a conversation about the last duel here right after this.
Duel, you say? What is
I don't?
He's dueling banjos. He's dueling banjos.
But isn't, don't you have to do the other part of the duel?
I did. You couldn't see me.
Oh right, because
it's because the graphic was up. I switched sides here.
I got you. Oh God, I want to crash Mikey's gay wedding with my pickup truck. All right, we're gonna get into this trailer here. This is the new film coming from Ridley Scott, and of course, we had a lot of fun the first section of the show. But this trailer is a little more serious, certainly, and set during the Middle Ages. I want to give the synopsis on this thing to make sure we get everything that we need to say about this film so we can talk about it knowledgeably and jump into what needs to be discussed here. It's a historical epic. It's being quoted as a cinematic and thought-provoking drama set in the midst of the Hundred Years' War. This one stars Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, Jodie Comer, Adam Driver, Zeljko Ivanović, for those of you who know character actors. And if you've seen the third season, I think, of Killing Eve, the lady who plays her handler, Villanelle's handler, she's in this as well. So a lot of good actors involved in this one. Of course, as we said, comes from Ridley Scott. Anyway, explores the ubiquitous power of men, the frailty of justice, and the strength and courage of one woman willing to stand alone in the service of truth. This is actually based on actual events, and it's based on a book by Eric Yeager. The book is called The Last Duel, A True Story of Crime, Scandal, and Trial by Combat in Medieval France. Hell of a title. The film unravels long-held assumptions about France's last sanctioned duel between Jean de Carajou and Jacques Legris, two friends turned bitter rivals. Carajou is a respected knight known for his bravery and skill on the battlefield. Legris is a Norman squire whose intelligence and eloquence make him one of the most admired nobles in court. When Carajou's wife, Marguerite, that's who Jodie Comer is playing, is viciously assaulted by Legris, a charge he denies, she refuses to stay silent, stepping forward to accuse her attacker, an act of bravery and defiance that puts her life in jeopardy. The ensuing trial by combat, a grueling duel to the death, places the fate of all three in God's hands. So, gentlemen, usually we talk about our trailers in the trailer park section, but this one, I think, bears a little more conversation as it's going to deal with sexual assault, with rape. And obviously it's set in the Middle Ages from the trailer, but it's going to echo into our time now for what we've been seeing. And certainly we've known for a number of centuries and decades in the history of the world, how powerless women can be when they bring these accusations out and how high of a bar they have to cross or to cross over in order to be believed. So this trailer looked incredible to me. And Jodie Comer's acting in this, especially the last shot of her with the bars are coming down, is just phenomenal work overall. And I'm looking forward to this. What did you two think of the trailer? What do you think about the subject matter? Like, what really affects you when you look at a trailer like this?
Go for it, Mikey. Okay.
Put the subject matter aside for a second.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed about this trailer is like, this looks like the Ridley Scott that I like to go see. This is like Ridley Scott back to form. Like, this feels like Gladiator epic. Like, it just feels like this huge, epic, sweeping scope movie. Like, epic, huge period piece, like a bunch of stars. And like, just like, you look at the cinematography, like, it looks like a gorgeous, huge movie. And so right off the bat, I'm excited because like, there's that Ridley Scott. And then there's, you know, the Prometheus Ridley Scott, which is another thing that I don't like to talk about. But like, so like this looks like the Ridley Scott that I'm excited about, that I really want to go see. As far as the subject matter, like, holy shit, like, I can't believe this is a true story. Like, it's a fascinating way to sort of dive into all of the things, like you said, Johnny, that we are currently dealing with. But the fact that, like, this is a real deal, that, like, this assault happened, this woman didn't stay silent, it was these two people who were friends brought against each other, and then the idea that, like, this whole concept of like, well, if you guys fight, we'll let God decide. And also to Matt Damon's character, I can't say his name, but like to his character, like, and also if you lose, we're going to burn your wife at the stake because that meant she's a liar. Like it is this, like, it's like the stakes are very high in this, like right off the bat, you're like, well, this is a lot. I'm really curious to see how they handle all of that. I watched the trailer. I read up a little bit about it. I almost like went to go read a little bit more about the actual events and then realized that I didn't want to because I actually don't quite want to know how things turn out until I see the movie.
Right.
But yeah, like it's a the only ding that I will give this trailer across the board is that I just really wish that Ben Affleck just didn't do period pieces.
He's not as bad as Keanu though, man. Right? I mean,
right, but Keanu has transcended acting to just become like the embodiment of the spiritual entity known as Keanu. And so anything he does, you're just like, yeah, like I don't care what you do. You are Keanu. Ben Affleck is still Ben Affleck. You know, he's down. Yeah. He's immortal with us, just picking up his Dunkin' Donuts on his front steps like anybody else. And I love Ben Affleck. Like, I have always loved Ben Affleck. I think Ben Affleck is a amazing director. I think Ben Affleck is an amazingly talented guy. And I think in the right roles, Ben Affleck is fascinating and great and awesome and delightful. I don't think period pieces are his forte.
Okay, fair enough. Shannon?
I will push back on that slightly before I get to my thoughts on the trailer. The last time that I remember seeing Ben Affleck in a significant like period piece was Shakespeare in Love. And
I knew you were going to say that. Doesn't count.
It fully counts. Just because nobody had a problem with him back in 98, that does not mean that it doesn't count. He did a good job because his role was very limited. Like, they're going to put him in the trailer because he's Ben Affleck. Now, the blonde hair with the beard, as a look, I'm kind of like, I don't know. It's kind of weird. But something we also forgot to mention, this is the first script that Matt Damon and Ben Affleck have written together since Good Will Hunting.
Yes. Oh, yeah, true.
I mean,
they're not the only writers.
Well, no, Nicole Holofcener, I think was the initial writer. Yes. And then they took over there. I might be wrong on that. Now, to the trailer, the last time Ridley Scott and Matt Damon teamed up for an October release was The Martian. Yeah. And that one turned out pretty well. But I agree. Yeah. I mean, are we going to get Gladiator Ridley Scott or are we going to get Kingdom of Heaven Ridley Scott? Now, I hear the director's cut of Kingdom of Heaven is much better, but the theatrical release for me didn't really check all the boxes. Mm-hmm. Matt Damon in this type of role, I mean, he looks fantastic. Like, he is one of those guys that even though he looks like he shouldn't be able to do accents because this is that dude from Boston. But like Invictus, I was like, I think it's right, but it just looks so weird coming out of your mouth. But Matt Damon is a phenomenal actor. Like Jodie Comer as well. If you watch Killing Eve, she's the one in Free Guy, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be out in a little bit. I mean, Jodie Comer, like her Killing Eve performance is just, you can't take your eyes off of her. So seeing just the two of them together, and then you add in Adam Driver as well. And I know a lot of people might have Adam Driver issues based off of, Marriage Story? That some people like to poke fun at that performance because they thought it was a little over the top. I was actually going through a divorce when that movie came out, and I'm like, that's pretty accurate. Everything about this trailer looks really, really good.
Is it the part where he punched the wall? Which is the accurate part? I don't know.
I'm just saying it's accurate. Vogel's doing his best Mitch McConnell, just then going back into his shell. But everything about this trailer, I mean, it does, based off of it being a trailer, it checks all the boxes.
Yeah,
it
looks for sure.
Like, it looks like a really, really intriguing movie. I also thought the Kingdom of Heaven trailer looked good. So the only way we'll be able to find out is October of this year.
Yeah, and to be fair, we're three guys talking about this. So for those of you lady watchers and lady listeners, like, we understand that. We accept that. We respect that. And it's just, this is the show. So we're going to talk about it because we think this is an important topic that they're addressing here in this film. And as Michael said, the fact that it's based on a true story can kind of throw you for a loop, because if you think it's hard to come forward now, imagine what it would be like to come forward in the Middle Ages when women were betrothed to their men, were almost, you could argue, somewhat enslaved to their men for their livelihood, for their existence, for their life. And there's that great scene in the trailer where Jodie Comer and Matt Damon are in that hallway, and she says something to him about sacrificing. And he's like, I'm sacrificing my life for you. And she goes, no, you're sacrificing your life for your dignity, not for me. That's what this is about. And so it's like, whoa. So I like that they're going to have these kind of harder edge conversations in this film. Yeah.
Well, and I will say, just so I don't not, like, I'm actually very excited that Matt Damon and Ben Affleck wrote this movie with the other woman who wrote it with them. I think Ben Affleck behind the camera, Ben Affleck working on like the creative side of things, like them writing a movie together, like that I'm actually genuinely excited about.
Yeah.
And we'll see how he does with his sting look. We'll see how that goes. But Jodie Comer, to just echo what you guys said, I mean, she is so fantastic. And I think that, and on the Adam Driver front, like, I think this is like what he's born to do. I know that like when they were filming the movie, there was a lot of pictures of them on set that basically said that, how come Matt Damon and Ben Affleck look like they were at a Ren Faire and Adam Driver looked like he just stepped out of a time machine? Like, dude just looks like he belongs back in the 13th century. Like, he steps up and he's like, I'm a squire. And I'm like, yeah, fuck, yeah, you are. Like, sure, cool. So I think probably he's well-suited for this. I am genuinely excited, but I do think it's going to be Comer's movie. Like, this is really...
Absolutely.
For everybody else, like whether Ben Affleck is decent or kind of silly, whether Adam Driver's overdoing it or like nailing it, whether Matt Damon's accent is dead on or not, like all of those things are important, and I hope that everybody's at their A game. Mm-hmm. But I think like we're gonna come out of this movie and be like, fuck, give her the Oscar right now, is what I hope.
Yeah. And this is what can sometimes happen, and some of you may think I'm wrong on this, and to be honest with you, that's okay. But like you look at the situation with Jodie Comer. For all of us who are in this bubble falling all over ourselves about her, we've all seen Killing Eve. But remember, it's on AMC. It's on a cable channel. It's not on this massive, large scale necessarily, like maybe HBO, like Game of Thrones or whatever. AMC is a smaller channel, so it's small. It's going to attract smaller attention. And then as she does more feature films, this is a film, though, that is going to explode her. That's how she gets to explode. Yes, she won the Emmy and whatever. And, you know, John Hamm was great on that. But it wasn't until John Hamm was, like, showing up in movies, showing up on 30, showing up on other things, that people started to conceive what John... Same thing Elizabeth Moss, right? It was movies, but then she did Handmaid's Tale. Now people... And then she got to Invisible Man. That's when everyone was like, oh, my God, she can do this?
Yeah.
So feature films just reach a wider berth. So as much as we love Jodie Comer now, she's about to, take a rocket ship to the stars if this film is good. Because just from the trailer... Her performance looks extraordinary.
Sorry, you bring up a good no. You just bring up a really good point that it is true of where we are today, for better or for worse, that a lot of like the most interesting and amazing performances are A, happening on television, and B, happening on networks or on streaming sites that like not everybody is watching. I mean, I think you're right. I think that like for anyone who's watched Killing Eve. Jodie Comer is like she's a shoo-in to be like, you're fucking amazing, but maybe the wider world of pop culture and the people that are going to see movies don't know her yet, and between Free Guy and this is a 1-2 punch that could really elevate her to the top. I think it's kind of the same with like Tatiana Maslany in She-Hulk. You know, like I think that, you know, so anybody who watched Orphan Black is like, well, you're fucking great. Like, give you any role. But like being in She-Hulk, being in the Marvel Universe for her, that's going to be like, there's going to be a whole bunch of people that are like, oh, my God, who is this person playing She-Hulk? Is she an unknown? Right. Like, you know, it's like that saying with, you know, for everyone in Hollywood who has overnight success took 40 years to get there.
Yeah, right. The other one of those is Christina Milioti. Like everybody loved her in Palm Springs. If you've seen Made for Love, it is brilliant. But I bet a majority of the mainstream don't know who she is. Yeah. So she needs to get that feature film role that's going to explode her so that people can really appreciate what a genuine talent Christina actually is. Yeah.
Yeah. And you you've probably seen her in a feature film, but because she had a smaller role, like in Wolf of Wall Street,
right?
Like she was in what, three scenes, four scenes? Like she wasn't in, she didn't have a huge part.
Margot Robbie comes in and completely dwarfs her in that movie. So yeah.
But she was so in that role, she was so effective. And she did her job, you know, she did her job to the T. Like she was she was excellent. She was excellent as that first wife who then gets replaced by the younger, hotter model. Chris Milioti is an excellent, excellent performer.
Yeah, but do you see any dangers with this movie? I mean, we see, you know, Adam Driver is adamant, his character is adamant that he didn't assault her, but we see him like slamming the door, but with just as much fervor, he's saying, it's not true. So this is a film that feels like it is going to ask a lot of questions of us as viewers, and it is going to make us confront some things where even a person who adamantly says it didn't happen we don't necessarily have to take that person point of view as the truth, no matter how much they may believe it. And is this going to be like Rashomon, where we get her story, his story, and Matt Damon's story, or maybe her handmaiden's story about what happened? That could be very, very interesting. And well, they are setting themselves up to walk a very, very high wire, in my opinion, with this.
To your point, actually, to exactly that point, that's why I didn't want to read too much. Like, I don't know if these events, like, I don't know if we know, I mean, obviously we probably know how it turned out, but we don't know what's true. Maybe we don't know what's true or not true. Yeah. Maybe that's the point of this movie, is that they're going to present us with a bunch of things like that. Maybe it'll just be a straight down the line, like, we know Adam Driver definitely did it, and let's watch how everybody reacts to it. Like, and I think there's versions of both of those that could be really interesting. I think that as far as that goes, the conjecture of like, will they be able to nail it? Will this movie be problematic, or will it be something that's held up as this is great? You know, remains to be seen until we actually see the movie. Like, this is definitely a movie that you could fuck up in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that's what concerns me, because I mean, you know, women very much are like, believe women. And so you've got a film here with Jodie Comer saying it, standing strong, standing true. And so it feels like we need to believe her. And then you look at Adam Driver's very adamant statement that he didn't. And then Damon's conflicted emotions about having to do this. So it's so fascinating and complex. Like I said, I hope they get it right. Like Mikey said, I hope they get it right, because it could absolutely fall apart in such a terrible way.
It's just like RuPaul says, good luck and don't fuck it up.
Hit the lip sync music. Let's do it. What were you going to say, Shannon?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I don't want to follow the RuPaul quote. I feel like Mike is playing us off pretty well here. But thinking about like when she has that exchange with Matt Damon, that he's not fighting for her. He's fighting for his own, for his pride, for his own ego. Yeah. Is the issue that this alleged assault took place, or is it because the alleged assault took place over someone important's wife?
Yeah.
And I imagine not knowing the actual history, I imagine that will be touched upon, because at this time, I mean, you know, Matt Damon, it seems like Matt Damon is someone well-regarded by the French king. If it was some farmer, Would this much of a stink have been kicked up? Maybe not.
Yeah, and that's a great point you bring up, Shannon, because that's another part of this, isn't it? Like, how does the church play its part in this? We see Zeljko Ivanovic, I hope I'm saying that right, as like this kind of arbiter of the church, this kind of like messenger of the church, saying, as Michael pointed out earlier, if you lose the battle, we're going to burn her to death. Because she said, clearly that's a lie. Clearly it didn't happen. And so how does the church play? A young king who's sitting there playing with animals like a little child, how's that going to play into all of this? So it's a great point you bring up. I imagine these are going to be like universally connectable characters that we can look at in our modern day, the church and how they handle these accusations, people in power, how they handle these accusations. So this kind of stuff, I think, is great to be exploring here in the movie overall, for sure. Yeah. Any other things to say about this with Ridley? Any concerns?
Fingers crossed.
All right. Well, there you go. We wanted to discuss this thing, and Ben Affleck and a number of people have come forward to speak about their work on it. And it's an incredible team, as we said. Nicole Hall of Center is the scriptwriter on this with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. She was nominated for an Oscar for Can You Ever Forgive Me? And the film, produced by Ridley Scott, but also by Kevin J. Walsh, who did Manchester by the Sea, Jennifer Fox, who did Nightcrawler, Nicole Hall of Center, Damon Affleck, and Kevin Halloran, who did Ford versus Ferrari, Drew Vinton, who did Promised Land, and Madison Ainley are all serving as executive producers. So this is a powerhouse team behind this movie, and you hope in the long run that it accomplishes its goal, and it's coming out October 15th nationwide of this year, and looks like it's set up to try to win some Oscars for damn sure. All right, well, there you go. I think that's a good episode of the Geek Buddies. Thank you all so much for watching or listening to us. We appreciate it madly. Shannon, what do we have to tell them?
Yeah, if you'd like to follow us on social media, on Twitter, it's @geek_buddies, on Instagram @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung, on Instagram @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you would like to follow Mr. Vogel, it is @MKToon. If you'd like to follow Mr. Rocha, it is @TheRochaSays.
Mikey?
Once you're a buddy for life. You will show up at our weddings in pickup trucks, and we want as many of you showing up in as many pickup trucks as possible. So here's what you can do to help us get a lot more buddies. First of all, hit the like button below, subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw Nation page, leave us some comments below in the chat, like what did you think of these trailers, what did you think of the WandaVision Loki sync-up, legit, not legit, do you believe in it, are you excited to see old, let us know your thoughts on everything, we love to check out what you guys have to say. If you are listening to us on Anchor or Spotify or Apple Podcasts or anywhere the podcasts are available, go ahead and leave us some stars there, leave some comments, it helps us go up in the rankings so more people can find us, and as always, the best thing that you guys can do is retweet this video with a funny little comment about the Geek Buddies, post it on your social media sites, just tell everybody that you're having a blast watching us, having a good time. You know, we love it. We love doing this. We love engaging with you guys. We love that you guys have fun with it. And so the more people that we can get having fun, the longer that we get to do it.
That's right. That's right. There you go. Well said. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Look for our reviews for... Oh, if you've seen our review for episode 6, the finale of Loki, it is up there if you haven't seen it. Also, we just recently did our last two Bad Batch reviews for episodes 11 and 12. That is up there for you all to watch as well. And What If is right around the corner. We'll definitely be back to doing a review for that series as well. 10 episodes coming from them. And already a lot of people talking about whether it's going to be canon or not. So... we shall see.
Looks like canon to me.
I'm all about Haley Atwell coming back. That's damn sure. All right, y'all take care of yourselves. Be well, and we'll talk to you next time on another brand new episode of the
Geek
Buddies.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.